Thank you so much for making time for us on Niaga Spotlight. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you so much. Pleasure to talk to you.
So, Dr. Birla, at the recent AVPN 2023, which you were in Kuala Lumpur for, you spoke alongside Youth and Sports Minister Hana Yeo about the state of mental health in the Asia-Pacific region and also the role of youth in the process. Dr. Birla, in your opinion, what should be prioritized for mental health impacts and investment in this region?
So, you know, like we discussed at the conference also, it takes about, the global standard is 3 skilled mental health professionals per 100,000 population of people. So we are very far from it, right? That means that India really needs an additional 30,000 psychiatrists. And we are decades away from that. And I think that issue really is there pretty much across Asia, where we are really struggling with the number of with the workforce, the number of people, the number of mental health practitioners. Now, traditionally, most philanthropies are largely funding, if they are funding, because I think funding itself is an issue. But otherwise, philanthropies normally fund awareness and behavioral change, and focus being on awareness, because that's the first starting point. However, I think what we really need to also focus on, and maybe some shift focus, is to capacity building. Because till we don't get into capacity building and we don't increase the number of mental health practitioners, no matter what we do and how much ever awareness we create, once people want to seek help and once we see a change in behavioral patterns, we won't have the workforce, we won't have the mental health practitioners to actually provide the services. So I think that is what really needs to be prioritized. And also by building technical capacities, utilizing the existing medical and digital infrastructures to their optimum. It could be for disseminating and upskilling mental health programs, mental health courses, you know, investing in community-based training programs. I think everything should be now focused on increasing the mental health workforce in order to actually bridge the treatment gap.
Absolutely. Dr. Birla, I couldn't agree more. And in Malaysia, of course, we face similar challenges when it comes to capacity for mental health care professionals. We need roughly about 3,000 odd to serve the Malaysian population. We barely have 400, 500 packs serving the population currently. Moving along, Dr. Birla, mental health clearly needs a refocus. Of course, we all remember everything we went through during the COVID pandemic, the lockdowns, and there was so much of laser sharp focus on mental health as a priority. But at the same time, let's now refocus. What are the future costs, Dr. Birla, which multiple stakeholders, governments, policymakers, institutions must realize are at stake if we don't continue addressing the silent pandemic at the same rate that the interest was just about a year or so ago?
So I think one of the silver linings of the pandemic, or rather the silver lining of the pandemic, was the fact that everyone realized that mental health concerns and mental health issues in itself is a silent pandemic. It really came out as something which was really staring us in our faces. It was like a white elephant that was sitting in the room. It had been there, but you know, people were really not taking notice of it. But the pandemic really got it into sharper focus. So of course, there was a surge of all mental health related activities, if I may say so, where people were really talking about it. Corporates were sort of sitting up and taking notice. I think all of us, even at an individual personal level, we all realized that, okay, mental health is a problem. It is here to stay. It is real. And we all really need to do something about it. Having said that, I think with the pandemic having settled down and now everyone's going back into, you know, recovery mode in terms of the economics and the financial stability, I think people are kind of taking it for granted now. So in a sense, you know, it's got two sides to it. In a sense that it has become more normalized and therefore people are taking it for granted. But the disadvantage is that then people stop acting on it the way they were doing during the pandemic. And I think what we really all need to realize, and which is what I spoke at the AVPN conference as well, is that, of course, every cause is very, very important. But what we all really need to realize is that mental health and mental well-being is at the core of everything that we do, right? So if we don't have positive mental health, we're always going to be at a disadvantage. We're always going to, it's hugely debilitating. It comes in the way of even your daily functioning, let alone higher levels of productivity. So I think we really, as humanity and as a community, we really need to understand that mental well-being is at the core of everything. It is the basic fabric that really goes through everything we do. And I think once everybody realizes the importance of that, the criticality of mental well-being, I think people will sort of, lay more emphasis on it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And moving along from there, Dr. Birla, something very interesting that I learned from our conversations is that when it comes to institutional biases, there's also, for example, hiring policies, patients not really wanting to include their mental health issues in their medical records because of fear of employers, kickbacks against it. But at the same time, you have had some very interesting experiences via Empower's clinical interventions and capacity building programs, where you have actually found that those from the employer's side or wider institutions are actually the ones approaching and interested in having the mental well-being of their employees checked. Could you share some of these examples with us?
Yes. So that is really interesting. And that's a lot of we're working with the government on a couple of very interesting projects. And I think they've really been able to move the needle in terms of perception of mental health concerns and also bringing it out more in the open and in the community and making it more sort of acceptable. And I think at the core of it really remains, the core of it being that it's very important for the top leaders and the top management to actually have a buy-in. So for example, we work with the police. We have counseling cells across all the police cells in Bombay. And this initiative is in collaboration with the police themselves, where we actually counsel, the Empower team counsels victims of rape and domestic violence and abuse. And in that process, we've also trained and sensitized a lot of the police personnel on how to be the first point of contact, how to themselves realize that, okay, the people who are coming to them could be having an issue and they need to be referred to our counselors. And in that process, I think the police and the personnel themselves realize that they also need mental health counseling. So I think the thing was that when we sensitized the managers and the top managerial leaders, and then they were able to percolate down, because then they sort of become non-judgmental, they sort of make it mandatory for people to seek help, and it kind of creates a safe haven of sorts. So the idea being that, we're creating mental health positive places. Similarly, even with the CISF, which is the security which mans all the airports.
Right.
I think everyone realizes that everyone needs that mental health support. And now with the top managers, the top leaders being aware and being cognizant, being open-minded, they are able to percolate down to the lowest cadre, and people are now wanting to seek help. So that the sense of judgment, the lack of judgment is not there. People are not feeling that they are going to be judged or they're going to lose their jobs. It's sort of upon as a very positive kind of atmosphere that, somebody needs help and they are actually being brave and, sort of taking health in their own hands and wanting to approach the counselor and seek help for it. They want to feel better.
That's right. And I think it's really encouraging looking at how the ecosystem is slowly spreading via Empower's good work. And I also hear so many replicable models, even from Malaysia's own example, where definitely mental health care is critical, especially for first-line responders, just like the police. Moving along, Dr. Birla. Now, WHO's Mental Health Atlas in 2017 found that on average, mental health expenditure accounted for less than 2% of government budgets for health. Now, looking at the impact on GDP that we've already discussed a little bit of, you absolutely cannot have a workforce fit for the future without it, right? What are further actionable solutions, Dr. Birla, for destigmatizing mental health, promoting mental health investments, really nudging governments to do what's right for the mental health and well-being?
Yeah. So like you're saying, I think all of us, even India, faces a significant mental health burden because, India is responsible to about 15% of the global mental health burden comes from India, whereas the spending is very, very less. It's only 0.05% of the total mental health of the total healthcare budget. So a lot really needs to be done in terms of diverting the investments towards mental health, because it really is a silent pandemic that needs that importance. So I think it's very crucial to really consider all the social determinants as well, the circumstances that people are born in, where they are raised, the way in the work, the age, all of that needs to be considered, because every segment and every community is very different. So of course, I would say that in India, a lot of effort is being put in by the government. There's a lot more that can be done. But yes, I think we are seeing changes. We are seeing the needle is moving. And I think a lot of multilateral agencies and philanthropies, private sectors, all of them are really, they really need to come together, because currently everybody is working in silos. You have some social enterprises working in silos. You have a lot of communities and NGOs working separately. So I think if we are able to collaborate and come together, I think that's the way we're going to be able to achieve scalability and positive health outcome. So for ourselves, I realized that working with the government and working with the PPP model, the public-private partnership model for community-based solutions, is a great way to actually scale up, because you're at the rural level, the kind of network that the government can have, no individual, no sole private enterprise can have that. Whereas we come in with actually providing the community-based solutions. So if we are able to collaborate, right, and partner with government, and if the government can partner with the private service providers to actually channelize the funds and services, I think it's a win-win situation. And I think it's the same for philanthropies. If they can partner with the private service providers, right, and then we in turn collaborate with the government, I think that tripart kind of working will be the way to collaborate and to achieve scale.
Thank you. Thank you so very much, Dr. Neerja Birla, founder, chairperson, Aditya Birla Education Trust and Empower. I think you shared some absolutely actionable examples, also for the Malaysian example.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Pleasure to talk to you.